Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello and good evening, and welcome to the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now Scan Blog Talk Radio Show. NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Victoria Kelly, and I am your host for this evening. My co-host is Annie, and we are scan number 3,199. That means we've got 3,199 episodes that are archived after today. So tonight I am excited to introduce you to our special guest. However, first, I'd like to tell you a little about NASCA, and that we have a single purpose at NASCA, which is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And then two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Again, we are on scan number 3199, and if you'd like to be part of the panel this evening, please call in 646-595-2118, and my co-host Annie will meet you on the back line and ask if you would like to ask a question or have anything to say during the show. We would love to have you join us and support our guests. And I'd also like to let people know that we have this Blog Talk Radio show same time on 5 nights a week. So you're welcome to join us any one of the nights, or go back and listen to any of the shows, because like I said, they're all archived. And we'd love to have you call in. So our special guest this evening is Zenova Cantrell from Missouri, an award-winning author, speaker, coach, and lifelong speaker of knowledge and wisdom. After a decade in the world of true crime and victim advocacy, Zenova has taken her 10,000 hours of study and entered the self-help field. Zenova is a certified NLP life coach through the American Union of NLP. She's also the owner of Zenova's Simply Biz author coaching service and is an award-winning crime writer with over 300 cases under her belt. One of her books was even endorsed by a retired FBI agent. To top it all off, a flag was flown over the Capitol in Washington, D.C. to honor her cold case work. Now, Zenova is using her study and experience to inspire, motivate, and educate her audience. Zenova's life coaching includes elements of NLP, practical psychology, ancient principles, and biochemistry. You can now live a more abundant life and enjoy the journey. Can't wait to hear about that. On these episodes, we welcome various co-hosts, survivor professionals, we'll assist in fielding questions and leave a variety of topics suggested by you, our call-in participants. Their trauma-informed perspective as survivor professionals will help them guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from the questions and topics brought to you, brought to us by our listeners. And everyone is invited to engage on tonight's show. And please visit the NASCA.org website, which is NAASCA.org. We have 40 different programs, and we invite anybody who is a survivor. We also have Facebook groups for closed group and open group. So we have a lot of interaction, and we also have three Zoom meetings now a week on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sunday, and you can find out more information about that on the website as well. And if you know of anybody who would like to come on the show and tell their story, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have survivors. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, if you know anybody that's survivor professional or professional that would like to share and how they're helping either children or adult survivors of child abuse or any of the many issues that surround us. So I'll go right to Sonova, and thanks for coming on again, and we appreciate you coming on all the time that you do, and welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Love the introduction.
Yes, I appreciate it. And I want to give a shout-out to you. The listeners don't know that she has her foot in a walking boot because she may have broke her bone in her foot, and she's still here. So kudos for her. She's here. She's in pain, and yet she's still that dedicated to you, our audience, to help you guys and to bring you words of encouragement. That shows you how dedicated the NASCA volunteers and staff are. If you need help, this is a place to be. It really is, because this is the way everybody I have met over the phone, obviously. I haven't got to meet anyone in person as of yet, but everyone I've met has been the same, you know, grade of professionalism, and I love being a part of this. So tonight I have a topic like I usually do. It's the power of words, but I encourage you, like she said before, if you have something you would like to share, if you have a question, if you would like to ask me something, you can leave it in the comments. I do have three devices running. I will try to catch your comments, but I will tell you it may be lost in the shuffle. I will go back and answer your comments after the show if I miss you, but the best way to talk is to call in, and they have the number there available for you if you want to call in and talk to us on the air. So I will just let you girls jump in anytime someone calls in and wants to jump in and have a question or a comment. I'll just jump in with my topic, and then I will give a little break here and there. I'll come up for air and see if anybody wants to talk besides me. So I want you guys to understand where I'm
asking a question before you start. What is NLP? You got that certified NLP life coach. I was curious what that stood for.
It is neuro-linguistic programming. It's one of those big, long, 50-cent words. Neuro-linguistic programming. So basically what it is neuro is the study of all of our nervous system. Linguistic is language. And programming is obviously how does language affect our mental programming. And so basically I went through the study and the courses of how our language affects our mindsets, how our language affects our outcomes, how our language actually can either better us or it can hinder us. Our language can actually keep us in that trauma loop over and over again. And so basically it is a really in-depth study on how our language, both internal and external, can affect our biochemistry in our bodies and our mindsets and how it affects our world around us. So that's what neuro-linguistic programming is.
Thank you.
Yes. So basically that goes right into the topic, words have power. Some of you that have followed me for a while, you have heard me talk about how thoughts are things. I started out as a victim's advocate, writing cold cases and true crime stories because I wanted to help victims get their stories out and get the cases solved. So I spent 5 years working myself to death, studying like a maniac, trying to figure out how to get my blog bigger, how do I get this bigger, 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 better, how to build websites, how to do this. I built this big, huge empire. I got the attention of Hollywood and the Discovery Channel and all this stuff. And the whole concept was I just wanted to help these hurting people. And I did. I encouraged them. I inspired them. Just to let them know that strangers care, you know, but I wanted to help them solve their case. I didn't have a badge, but I had a pen and I had a heart. And so I wrote as if it was my family member. I was very, you know, I was very careful with how I worded things. I was very careful, wrote from the victim's family standpoint. And I helped bring in leads that helped solve 4 cases. And I thought I was doing a good thing until the last one hit. And this is a woman that I care about deeply to this day. She had been working to help solve her brother's case for over 50 years. And the case had gotten so old that there was nothing really could be done about it anymore. But I helped bring in FBI, and I helped bring in, witnesses and all these different things. And there was nothing really could be done. So I was like, okay, well, let's bring in Hollywood to memorialize the story, you know, so he's going to live forever, you know, through the story. But it's almost like I took away her identity from her. She had become a victim for so long that I took it from her. And here I thought I was giving her what she wanted, and I stole her very existence from her. And then I watched her spin out of control, and it was like she didn't know what to do with herself, and she started making the same old videos again. And then she fell off the internet. And I turned to my husband, and I said, I hate this. I said, I don't think I'm helping these people at all. I said, I'm doing all of this study and psychology and trauma and coaching and all these things, but I'm not giving this to the people. I'm just helping them solve their cases. I said, I have the tools to help this person, but I'm not giving it to her. I am just helping her with her case. And I told my husband, if she doesn't find a new purpose, if she doesn't move from that victim mindset and find a way to bring purpose to her life again, I said, I'm afraid she's going to pass away. Because she had been fighting for so long, and she was up in age, and she started getting all kinds of health problems and all kinds of – and now, quite frankly, I haven't heard from her. Nobody can get a hold of her. She's not answering no calls. And I, quite frankly, am watching for obituaries. And I'm thinking, oh, man, am I helping people or not? And so that was the catalyst that made me finally cross over into coaching full-time, because I'm like, I have things that will help. And so that's what finally made me go, okay, enough. I've got to use what I have to help. And so I told people, I was like, I'm not the standard life coach. I'm not that Chrissy got everything together. I am this no fluff, no nonsense, no toxic positivity. I'm just no nonsense tips, real world tips on how to help real life situations. And I said, so I don't know if I can even be a life coach. And so that's where I started, because I felt like you can't look at people that have been sexually abused as children. You can't look at people that have been put through human trafficking. You can't look at someone who is still got a missing loved one. You can't look at someone who has a family that was a homicide victim. You can't look at them with toxic positivity and say, everything's fine. Just be happy. It doesn't work. And that's not what right. these people need. And so I tell people when they watch my videos, I'm not that kind of life coach. I have bad days. I've been going through some serious stuff lately, and I'm struggling with it. But I tell you, these are things that I've studied, and when I apply them to my life, they make a change. And so this is the platform that I come from. I'm not going to be some prissy, you know, everybody's perfect kind of life coach. I tell everybody, I said, I don't have my ducks in a row. I'm not sure I have all ducks. I might have a turkey and a goose in there somewhere. I don't even know where they're all at. But this is what I'm studying, and this is how it helps me. And this is how I kind of got into coaching and how I started studying this. But the very first thing I learned that was so startling to me, you know, as well as I do, we've all know some people that literally get so sunk into depression that they literally grieve themselves to death, okay? And then we see some people that get into the same horrendous situation, and yet somehow something within them, it turns a different way, and they become a powerhouse, and they rise like a phoenix, and they take that pain, and they bring something new to the world to help other people with it. And I'm like, what is that? What makes that difference? If this is the same coin, which side? Is it heads? Is it tails? What is that little element that makes that difference, and how can I help people get to that? And so that's what drove me to study. And the first thing I found out was your thoughts dictate how your body feels. Your thoughts, whether they say, some studies say you have 100,000 thoughts a day, some studies say you have 400,000 thoughts a day. Now, I have ADHD, and my brain's on hyperdrive all the time, so I'm thinking mine probably is closer to the 400,000 thoughts, and so I'm not sure, somewhere in there. But they say, on average, 80% of them are negative. Now, here's what I didn't know. We all know if you think on bad things all the time, you'll be depressed. If you think on good, happy things all the time, you'll feel better, okay? Well, that's a basic generic concept that we all just kind of ignore. Well, they have done some studies, and they have proven that every single thought, your brain either sends out good chemicals into your body or bad chemicals into your body. It's either sending out stress hormones or it's sending out peaceful, happy, healing hormones. And I didn't realize it was with every thought, and I thought, okay, so if cortisol literally starts to damage you inside over time, can you imagine going to the doc and saying, hey, I need 80,000 shots of cortisol today, right here in this left arm. Let's go ahead. Let's get it started. It's going to take a while. No, we wouldn't do that. That's insane. But that's what we do with our thoughts. And so I started studying how our thoughts create this chemical bombardment in our bodies, and how it affects our bodies, and how an overdose of cortisol and adrenaline literally starts shutting down pieces and parts of our body and our systems. And over time, that starts creating all these health problems. And I thought, wow, okay, so thoughts, that's actually powerful. And then I'm thinking, okay, let's dive in a little deeper. And that's where I got to this topic, words. Words are powerful. Words have the ability to change our perception of reality for better or for worse. Words actually have energy. They evoke emotions, and they set the tones of conversation. The power of words comes from our emotional response to them. Now, what we don't understand until you get to really studying some of this stuff, and I realize not everybody's, a dork fish like me. Everybody doesn't study like I do. So I try to take these concepts and bring them down into bite-sized pieces. But our conscious mind and our subconscious mind are both responding to words, whether we think we're paying attention to them or not. And so we automatically, our hippocampus is in our brain is like this big giant label maker, And it's constantly saying, okay, positive, negative, positive, negative. And so we hear a word, and if that's a negative, okay, so it slaps a negative label on it, and that ignites the fear center of our brain, and then our brain starts sending out cortisol like crazy, okay? And then we have a happy thought and happy words, and our brain starts sending out these good chemicals. We're thinking, okay, words are powerful. Got it. Nice. That's great. Well, here's the thing. I have started doing some studying, and I have found out that the University of California did a report, there was a New York Times article on it. Let's see, I'm looking through my notes here. It was titled The American Diet, and it was written by Nick Bilton. I didn't write down the date of it. But he quoted a University of California report, and he said the average American consumes 34 gigabytes of content a day. That's over 100,000 words daily. And 34 gigabytes of data our brains are consuming on a daily basis. Now, if you think about that and you think, okay, 100,000 words I am taking in, I'm going to say at least 100,000 more. So I've got 200,000 words here. And we know that most of them are negative. How much damage is that doing to our bodies? And then here is something scary as well. And this is something I wanted to really bring home to this audience because it's so important. This audience has all been through trauma. Our body is getting the same trauma response because our subconscious mind can't tell the difference between a actual event and a perceived event. So our body can't tell the difference of the actual event of the traumatic experience and the rehashing of it. So our subconscious can't. Obviously our conscious can tell a difference, but our subconscious can't. So what happens? The subconscious sends out those same chemicals. Our body goes through the same trauma response. Now, you see some people that are going through therapy and they have these terrible reactions to a certain sound or a certain, you get PTSD victims that have certain sounds that just trigger them and set them off, and then they it takes them so long to get focused and settled back down and their whole nervous system is just shaking. It's because their subconscious is actually triggered the same exact way as if it was happening again. And this is the reason why when I was asked, and I talked, I was interviewed for this show the first time, I said, yes, I don't mind talking to people about their experiences and them telling their stories. I said, but I also want to talk about something they can do to go from victim to vitality. I also want to talk about something positive because I know that the subconscious mind, I'm going to blow your mind here, subconscious mind actually controls 95% of our existence. No, the first thing you think is like, oh, that's got to be wrong. Look it up. Prove me wrong. Look it up. Our subconscious mind controls 95% of our existence. Only 5% of our existence is actually cycled through the conscious mind. And then once you go through the same process 2 or 3, 4 or 5 times, then the conscious will hardwire that process in and flip it over to the subconscious mind to try to increase the brain's efficiency, okay? So what happens is it's constantly trying to push over as much as it can to the subconscious, okay? So if the subconscious cannot tell the difference between the actual traumatic event and the rehashing of the traumatic event, it's going to send out the same trauma signals to the body, okay? See, we need to understand that our mind, part of the body, we are a mind in a body. I know that sounds very metaphysical, okay? We are a mind. We're not a body, because you don't go introduce yourself as hand. Hi, I am hand. No, you have a hand. You have a foot. You have a face. You're not your face. You're not your hand. You have a body. You are your mind. Okay? Your mind is controlled by the subconscious. So what we have to do is find a way to reroute those old trauma responses into something positive. So when you hear that trigger again, it reroutes a different way. And that is possible to do. That's the good news I have. It is possible to do. It takes some time. It takes some conscious effort. And it takes repetition. But this is what's so important. How do we do it? We do it by taking conscious note of words. What kind of words are we saying to ourselves? Now, we know that it's not appropriate to say certain words to other people. We know that it's not appropriate to say certain words to children. But yet, we will say those words to ourselves. We will say even worse words to ourselves. And this is where we need to really start taking note. What are you telling yourself? Are you taking the responsibility and the blame and the shame? Are you taking that and labeling yourself with it? Are you looking in the mirror and taking those words on yourself when those aren't your words? The guilt, the shame, the blame, all of those negative words, guilt, shame, blame, those are all negative words. They all belong to the abuser. They belong to that person over there that hurt you in the first place. But here's the problem. We get into such a habit of not even paying attention to what we're saying to ourselves. And this is where we've got to take note of the words we are using when we talk to ourselves. When we look in the mirror, we need to speak positive over ourselves. We need to look in the mirror and say, hey, you're looking good today. Now, that's something I have had a hard time doing. And this is something, as a life coach, I probably shouldn't tell you. But the other day, I walked up and I got myself ready to go. And for the first time in my 43 years of existence, I said, hey, girl, you're looking good. And then I'm like, what's wrong with me? You know, because, see, I was raised in a religious family, and they didn't tell me I was pretty. They didn't tell me I looked good. They didn't tell me anything like that because they didn't want me to get prideful or arrogant. Now, I don't think I'm the ugliest person on the planet. I think I'm pretty good at putting on makeup, you know. But the thing is they didn't know any better. But I've never been able to look at myself in the mirror, even when I was skinny and looked fabulous. I was never able to look at myself in the mirror and say, hey, you're looking good, girl. Never. So this is something I'm telling you, when I study these things and I apply them to my life, they work. And that's why I want to share them with you. So stop for a second, see if there's anybody on the line, and I'm going to get a drink. Anybody that wants to say anything?
Danny, would you like to, I don't know if anybody wants to open their mic, and we're just going to jump in here. I think we've got all the mics open. And if somebody would like to make a comment. Okay. Was anybody else that would like to make a comment?
Hey, guys. It's Cricket. I love what you're saying, Sonova. And I like working with kids, I learned, you know, I had an issue with one of my son's teachers because while walking him to school one day, he said, Mommy, am I bad? And I said, no, who told you you were bad? And he said that his teacher did. And I had worked with her for many years, and, you know, I wasn't too happy about that. And I did have a talk with her, but... You tell children that they're bad. enough, they're going to act out because that's instilled in their mind.
Yes, exactly. It sticks in their subconscious, and then they start to believe it, and then they will start to behave badly because they believe it, and that's what they believe about themselves, so that's what they do. You know, so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So she is literally creating something bad. And all it does is hurt the child. It doesn't hurt the teacher. So that's a perfect example.
I like the fact that you stood up for your child and you said, no, I'm not bad. And that child must have felt safe enough to ask that question, you know, because a lot of kids don't. They just internalize it and just keep it inside, you know. And it's really great to have that communication at a young age. I found that with my children, you know. My kids were very open and stuff at that age as well. And also when your kids see you advocating for them and protecting them, that sends them a message even more so, I think. About that safety that we all need and the love and protection that kids should be getting in their homes, you know. And unfortunately, the home is the most unsafe place to be, is what I say, because of the high percentage of child abuse that happens in the home. You know, they used to say the strangers did all the abuse, so now we're finding out that the homes are with, you know, people in the community. So I'm glad you brought that up.
When it comes down to it, the parents are functioning at their highest capacity, and if that's their highest capacity, we're in trouble as a nation, you know, because most people function at their highest capacity, and I'm thinking, what did they suffer to get that as their highest capacity? You know, and then you think it just goes on one generation after the next, and it just builds and snowballs and snowballs. I seen a thing on Facebook that was really great. It showed a generational thing, and it showed an older gentleman yelling at a slightly younger gentleman, yelling at another gentleman, and then it showed a break, and it had one man on one knee holding up a shield, and then he was speaking love to another gentleman that was a little bit younger, and then that gentleman was handing his heart to a little boy. And it says, break that generation of verbal trauma. Oh, I loved it, because the thing is where did those parents learn that? Where did they learn that? They probably went through that themselves or worse. You know, and so we have to take that time like Cricket did, and we have to break that generational cycle. We have to be the one that stands up and says, no, I will not verbally abuse or physically abuse my children. I will not allow that to happen in my house. I will not allow that to happen in my child's classroom. You know, and that takes strength, and that takes, you know, courage that, you know, some parents don't seem to have, but that is very commendable, because, you know, so many kids suffer and their parents don't stand up for them. And it's tragic because the child grows up thinking that, man, if my parent won't even stand up for me, I must be worthless. And, you know, so it causes so much trauma. And so anybody else have something to say before I go on to the next thing? Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say something about, you know, a lot of people that I've worked with and stuff that had appearance, and like you said, they're recreating that cycle. They have a belief that nothing can change, that they can't, you know, they can't make a change. And because, you know, some of us are just living, for me, I just living in crisis all the time. And I was just, you know, focusing on getting food, shelter, clothing, you know, or surviving or whatever. And there's no time to sit like peacefully and, like you said, think about these messages, you know, that we're saying to ourselves and, of course, saying to others. You know, and I've gone through different cancer and kidney failure and of course, abuse and homelessness, all these things, you know. And every time I've gone through some sort of an experience, I just kind of like focus and think to myself, you know, well, I know other people have gone through this, you know, like you said, you know, some people, you know, just to get them done, and other people seem to thrive, and kind of ask myself, well, how can I do that, you know, and bad things keep happening, and something else happened, you know, and I started interpreting I was a bad person, you know, because bad things happen to bad people, you know, that's one of the things that some people say, you know, but I kept, you know, going back to that, and getting help, and reinforcing, you know, in myself that I get through it. I mean, just that message, I can get through this, and I can, you know, look what I got before. And but it's amazing that when something really devastating happened again, you know, I forget how I got out of it the last time, and I have to go through that whole process again, you know, of figuring out, wait a minute, you know, how to get through the last thing, you know, or remind myself I did get through the last thing, or I got through the last 20 things or whatever it is, you know, instead of going, oh my God, you know, I can't handle one more thing, you know. And then also, like, when we're speaking actively to ourselves, a lot of time we're speaking, and, you know, even by saying, like, you know, oh God, I did something really stupid today. So we're not only reinforcing ourselves, but we're putting that out there in the world, and other people are picking up on that. And that's reinforcing their beliefs on themselves, too.
Exactly.
So I just want to bring that out, too. So, you know, like, you know, taking love in and then, you know, putting out love into the world, you know.
Right.
For me, that's important. You know, and another thing is my, you know, whenever I feel off kilter, I think about my mind, body, and spirit. And usually one of those is out of balance of the other, you know. And I go, okay. Wow, what's going on with my mind that's not, you know, like keeping me, you know, kind of stable, and with all what's going on, you know, spiritually, you know, do I need to meditate some more, or, you know, whatever it is I do, you know, or my body, you know, geez, have I eaten today, you know, have I drank enough water,
or what happened sometimes, people don't realize what they put in their body is what their body's going to make their new cells out of. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, and every food has its own energy and its own, you know, its own. If you study this, everything gives off energy. Everything is energy. You know, nothing, everything moves, nothing rests. Everything vibrates down at the atomic level. If you, you know, everything that looks solid is actually not. You know, so all of your food has its own frequency, and if you put junk food in your body, you're going to get junk energy out of it. You know, you're not going to get the same high energy level out of you know, fast food stuff as home prepared, you know, good quality vegetables and you know, products that you're going to eat. You know, and so I mean, it you're perfectly right. You know, you've got three parts to your being, and you've got to pay attention. To figure out, you know, are you taking care of every part of it? And that's absolutely true. So,
I got one more quick question. Okay, so you talked about all these messages that we have subconsciously. So I think, I don't remember what the quote was or how much you quoted, but okay, so how does a person find out what those messages are if they're subconscious? Because a lot of people, well, that's all conscious, so I can't do nothing about it. So I'd be curious to hear what your answer to that would be.
Ask me again, because you kind of cut out. What'd you say? What, the pictures in your subconscious?
Okay. No.
What'd you say?
If you've got subconscious, all these subconscious negative messages, and, you're trying to look at and to change those negative messages, and so people will say, well, that's all subconscious. How am I supposed to know what those things are? So how does a person find out what is in their subconscious?
Perfect. Yes. I love it. I always tell people, and if you look on my website, I have a illustration about that. There was a self-help author, a psychologist,
some back in like the 1800s or something that created a stick figure man that said, because he was wondering what does the mind look like, and everyone wants to say it's the brain, and actually the brain is not the mind. The brain is just an electronic switching station. It's an organ like every other piece of the body, because you are more than your brain. And so he was trying to figure it out, so he drew this circle, a big circle for the head, and then a little stick man, and then he put a line through the center of the circle, and the top was the conscious and the bottom was the subconscious. Well, of course, we just said that the conscious is 5% and the subconscious is 95%, so I put that line way up top of that head. But this is the thing, so you can kind of get a visual. And I tell you to go to my website and look that up, synovainc.com, because that'll kind of give you an idea. A visual always helps when you're trying to figure out some of these things. So here's the concept that I want you to understand. When you have any kind of pre-programming, which we are all governed by pre-programming, whether we like it or not, we are pre-programmed by genetics. We are pre-programmed by the society we're raised in. We are pre-programmed by our parents. And generations back, we're pre-programmed. So there are some of it that we know of and some of it that we don't know where it came from, but this is where you find out about it. Everything that you go to do, you are going to feel. See, thoughts, it starts with thoughts. And then your thoughts change your biochemistry, okay, because we talked about it sends out either that serotonin and all those things that your body needs, or it sends out adrenaline and cortisol, okay? Now, here's the thing. How do you feel? Now, if you've got negative programming running, you're going to feel it. So if something goes along and you're trying to figure out, okay, what is my negative programming? Start paying attention to how you feel. When you go and do a certain activity, did you want to do that activity or did you just always do that activity? Then ask yourself, how do you feel? Do you feel inside that you feel like your insides are just crunched up and you hate to do this, but you've always done it, so you got to do it? Well, that is a negative program. So what you want to do is take more time in meditation. Take more time in quiet. You know, I say meditation, and a lot of people think, oh, they think yoga, and they think all this stuff. Just sitting still and being quiet until you can breathe deeply, until you feel your spine is straight from the bottom to the top, until you can feel your heartbeat in your fingertips, you know, until you can feel your heartbeat in every part of your body. When you can sit that still, then you can start to feel things, okay? Then you're going to start to feel a little bit more of those pre-programs. So when you start to think about things, how does it make you feel? When you start to say, okay, I'm going to go and go, you know, I had a gratitude journal that I put out at Christmas time that said surviving the holidays with gratitude, because we are feel like we have to do certain things at the holidays. And we don't have to do those things at the holidays. Now, our religion may dictate us and tell us to do certain things. Our parents are those generational programming things may tell us to do certain things. Our family may require us to do certain things. Our society may say things, but we don't have to do any of it. So here's the thing. How does it make you feel? Now, we always go to a certain family member's house on Thanksgiving. We go to a different family member's house on the Christmas holiday. We go to a different family member's house on the New Year's holiday. I know some people have Hanukkah and they have different holidays in between there, but those are my family's routines. Now, there are certain times where we're going to go to a certain family member's house that I get anxious, and I start to get grumpy, I start to get snippy, and I didn't even notice that I was doing it.
And I had to check myself because the kids thought I was angry. And I really wasn't. I'm like, what is this? You know, my daughter's like, Mom, are you mad? I'm like, no, actually I'm not. And so I started thinking. I'm like, I'm anxious. My chest is tight. I feel uncomfortable. I'm kind of, you know, if I stop for a few minutes, I'm really kind of stressing about having to go to this specific place and see these specific people because a certain person is going to be at this gathering that actually traumatized me when I was a child. Okay? And so I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's a negative programming that I hadn't even thought of. All I knew, all my kids knew was Mommy gets grumpy at the holidays. Well, now I know why. And guess what? I don't go. Real simple. You know? I don't even make an excuse. I just don't go. And it saves me so much, you know, anxiety and stress. I don't know how much cortisol I have avoided pumping through my system. And my poor kids don't get their head snips off because I'm not griping at them, you know, unintentionally because I wasn't angry. But if you pay attention and you start paying attention to your feelings will tell you because feelings are actually a marker of what's going on in your subconscious and in your body, whether you really pay attention to them or not. I know in Western society, we're taught to just stuff those emotions. And that's the worst thing you can do. It really is. I mean, that's the reason why I had a nervous breakdown at 25, because I was an overachiever stuffing all the emotions of childhood trauma and didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about it. And so I hope that answers your question. Did that clear it up for you?
And I also want to mention something about people don't, you know, understand maybe triggers or whatever. So, you know, I beat my kids, you know, they want to go see Santa Claus, and I never knew why I felt so anxious about it. And, you know, when I started talking about my child abuse and my therapy, my godfather, who also abused me, played Santa Claus every year. You know, so that brought that back. But once I dealt with it with the therapist and stuff, I didn't have that anxiety when my kids, you know, went to see Santa Claus. So, yeah. Because I thought, I don't want to ruin my kids' Christmas or holiday or whatever it is, experience going somewhere, doing something different, whatever, that my experiences were ruined. If they want to go, you know, say to the grocery store or something happened there or whatever, I don't want to move, you know, ruin that for them. You know, like you said, to transfer that.
You would have if you hadn't figured out what it was. The only thing is, I'm going to ask you something. In what you just said to me, I want you to think there's one little bitty word I would love for you to take note of and work on changing. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm saying this from personal experience and with all the love that I can.
Sure.
It is not.
Sure. No,
I want you to drop the word my out of your vocabulary. Don't put it in front of trauma no more because it's not your trauma. Okay. Because that is a label and you are taking it to yourself. And it may not seem like much, but you cannot release the pain and you cannot move from victim to vitality completely until you say, that was a traumatic experience. I went through that traumatic experience, but that's not my trauma. Okay?
Oh.
And so
taking
the my off will help a lot.
Yeah. And then one other thing I want to say with just one word too is the just word. Like I just was abused by my stepfather, you know, and, you know, then I say, let's take a just word off, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's in my
abuse. Abuse is horrible and just seems to minimize it. you know, and we don't want to minimize it. It's a horrible, horrendous thing. However the abuse happened, whatever degree of abuse it was not deserved, and it's not yours. Saying just, it's one of those words that seems to kind of minimize it, like it wasn't that big of a deal. And it was a big deal.
Right.
And it was a big deal. But you came through that big ordeal, and you are more powerful than you realize.
Right.
And this is where we want to get you to, because being there, you know, being a parent, all those little words, I look back after I started studying this, and I thought, oh, my goodness, how many words have I implanted into my children's subconscious, not realizing what I was doing, and how many have I planted in my own, you know, and so I try to undo as much as I can, you know, but we can only work as to the best of our ability. You know, like I said, everyone's trying to function to their highest capacity. So once you know, then we need to actively start, you know, and this is what this lesson is about. Words have more power than we realize. And so the concept is not to say that one word is worse or better or anything like that, or not to say don't do this or do say that. It is just to say, let's take note of the words we use, and if they don't serve us, then let's change them, because we have the power to change the words. And we think words don't have power, but they absolutely do. Did you have something else you want to say before I went on to the next deal?
Yeah, I did want to mention that I've talked to a lot of survivors that will come to that, you know, awakening or whatever, that say, boy, I have said a lot of negative things to the kids and have a lot of regrets. And I always remind them that you did what you did with the information you had at the time. And I said,
yeah,
I have a lot of regrets, but I realized that, you know, I was given really bad information and outright lied to you. Know? And that's where I was listening. So we need to be very kind and loving to ourselves and say, from like you said, now I know this, let's go forward, you know. So I just want to mention that. But I'm interested in the things you have to say. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm just happy to have someone that is online that has questions, and I don't have to just talk to the air for an hour and a half, you know. Because I'm happy to talk, all, you know, but it makes the conversation more meaningful, and I think it gives it a little bit more depth for people that are listening and maybe too afraid to call or unavailable to call. And so I appreciate all of your comments. I really do. So I wanted to tell you guys.
Does anybody,
you know,
else?
Kind of into this.
Does anybody else on the line? Does it, before we go on, does anybody else on the line want to jump in and make comments or ask a question? Before we go on, just jump in.
I'm good. This is just so interesting, you know, and you know, like what Sonova was saying, like to take certain words out of your vocabulary. One thing I do, I also, because I'm a recovered addict. So I keep in my mind certain things that if I just lost my thought.
Well, I know as when you're battling addiction, it does make a difference how you label yourself. So if you label yourself a recovering addict, that means you're still fighting. If you label
yourself a recovered addict, then
you're done.
I'm a recovered, but I realize what I wanted to say, that in recovery, they tell you, first you have to admit you have a problem. So in anything, first we have to realize that there's something we want to change. before we can change it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly true. We have to realize, you know, once we can understand that there is an issue and that we have an issue to change, then that's the first step, you know, just awareness, I think, is the first step to before you can do anything. You have to be aware of the situation. Now, we kind of alluded to this before. I'm not sure who I was talking to when I said this, but we had talked about, I think it was when we were talking about Cricket and her son asking about what the teacher said. When we say certain things, we start to believe it after time. Well, there is an actual term for that, and it was first identified in 1977 during studies in the Villanova University and then repeated and verified in the Temple University short time later. Now, it's called the illusory truth effect. It is actually found out that when the mind hears an absolute lie, when the mind hears this repeatedly, it begins to believe it, and it's called the illusion of truth. It's an illusory truth effect. When the mind hears an outright lie, if it hears it long enough, it will start to accept it as truth. This is where, you know, you hear stories of brainwashing and things like that. When you hear the lie long enough, you will start to believe it. And then when you believe it and you accept that label as part of yourself, then you start to act it out. And so if you think you are a negative term, then you will start to behave in that negative manner. And so this is kind of goes along with that, the illusory truth effect. You can look that up sometime in your free time. But this is what I wanted to tell you guys about, that words have so much power. And if you don't think that they do, there's a study, I'm going to look, I think it's 2019. I apologize for the rattling of my papers. I always bring my notes with me. I know some people don't, but I like to have them with me because I don't want to misinterpret a quote or tell you the wrong study or anything like that, because I think this stuff is so important that if I misquote it, it could change what it means and it not help you the way it should. So I take it very seriously. I don't just get on the radio and start blithering. I have 6 pages of notes here. So it's very important to me that I get it right. So, yes, it's 2019 brain imaging study. Now, what they did is they took patients that were in a significant amount of pain, either after a surgery or with a chronic illness or something. Anyways, they had a significant amount of pain to begin with. They hooked them up to their brain with all the electrodes and everything, and they started watching how their brain reacted to certain things. And what they did was they had them look at a screen, and they flashed words in front of their face. Now, they flashed them fast enough that they just got them read, but they didn't have time to think about them. Okay, so this was just flashing straight to the subconscious. The conscious didn't have time to think about the word. So they flashed 90 seconds worth of negative, painful, horror-filled words. So every kind of trauma-filled word they could think of, they flashed it in front of these people's face for 90 seconds. Now, before the test started, they had taken their little survey and the people had told what their pain levels were. Okay. Afterwards, they started watching, and when they was reading through these flashing negative words, they literally watched the amygdala, which is on the back side of your brain. The amygdala is the fear center of your brain, okay? They watched that fire up like lightning and start immediately shooting the body full of adrenaline and cortisol, okay? Just from 90 seconds of reading painful words. Okay? Now, after this was done, they went through and did their little testing again. The patients had their pain levels, their perceived pain levels, had increased 30 to 40% all the way across the board. Okay? What happened? Did their pain increase? Probably not. The same exact problem was still in their body. Their perceived pain levels had increased. Why? Because their body had just filled with cortisol and adrenaline. Okay? So their perception of pain had just increased 30 to 40%. Okay? So just by reading negative words for 90 seconds on a screen. Okay? So they did this again. Another day, new set of subjects, already in pain, same deal. But this time, they flashed happy, peaceful, loving words for 90 seconds. Every single one of them, they watched their brains fire up in different places in their brain, and it started sending out happy hormones, the serotonin, all of the chemicals that helps your body heal itself. Okay? The amygdala wasn't fired up at all. Okay? They went ahead and did their testing afterwards. Everybody's pain levels decreased by 30%. So if you don't tell me, if you don't believe that words, that visual words are powerful, then you need to go read that scientific study and see how it happened. Because just reading words, really fast flashing words, changed their perception of pain, either increased it 30% or dropped it 30%. That's a massive, that means 60% difference there from the highest to the lowest because of a word, okay? Now, we know that words are powerful, that words have started war. We know that words have ended war. We know that words have brought love to a community. Words have destroyed communities. Words have changed the world, okay? But words have literally changed pain levels. Now, they've done some studies on professional athletes, and they have watched them and tested them however they did it. I didn't get into the details on how they ran the test. I just read the results. They read the results. They gave these professional athletes affirmations. So they said specific affirmations, either positive or negative, before they went into the big game. And across the board, they all performed the same way. If they said positive affirmations, they played better. If they said negative affirmations, they had the worst game of their career. Every time. So they know for a fact that your words are going to change your perception of reality. So this is how powerful these words are. With our words, we implant our ideas in other people's minds. We either inspire and motivate, or we help people focus. We have the power to heal and to help with our words, or we have the power to kill and destroy with our words. There was a case back when I was writing true crime that I watched. This teenage girl had harassed this boy with depression and anxiety and suicidal tendencies. She had verbally harassed him until he killed him with her words. They took her to court, and she was found guilty, not of murder, but of manslaughter. And I'm like, good, because she actually did it. She harassed that poor boy till he committed suicide. So, I mean, we can literally heal or kill with our words. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this isn't a religious scenario, but I have to tell you this quote from the Bible. The word, the Bible says, let me see, I wrote it down because this is powerful. I read it and I was like, oh my gosh, it says that? And so let's see, how does it say it? Hang on. It says, it says the power of life and death is in the tongue. Oh, it says, so we think that words aren't that bad, okay? In the book of James, it says, the tongue is a fire of hell. The Bible says that. So I'm sitting here going, whether you believe in the Bible or not, that's pretty drastic. You can literally kill somebody with your words, including yourself. Mm-hmm. So you've got to realize that thing in your mouth can either cure or kill yourself and others. can cure or kill your children. And so this is where, you know, I like taking quotes from everything, so I hope that doesn't offend anybody. But I thought that was so powerful that it applies the fires of hell to your words. I was like, wow.
Yeah, and
that's
it's so true. One of my
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
One of my Sunday school children, I did 3 to 5 year olds, and there's certain things I don't like teaching the little ones because they're too young to understand, and they hear you say a word, therefore they get the visual in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we were explaining communion. Clearly, the child could see that that was water in his cup. Not blood, but he cried because he didn't want to drink blood.
Right. Well, and there's some things you've got, you know, it doesn't matter what religion you are, you've got to use some common sense when you're dealing with children because they don't understand.
Yes.
Okay, so whatever religion you are or not religion you are, you've got to use common sense when talking to children, you know. Whatever religion or non-religion you are, because children only have a certain capacity to understand. So bringing past that, I wanted to tell you guys, we've got about 20 minutes here, but I wanted to tell you guys so drastic that I wanted to let you guys in on. We need to understand that words are constantly coming at us. So we talked about how we could say anywhere from 100,000 to 400,000 thoughts, you know, in our mind. So say, we'll say 100 just for continuity's sake, 100,000 words that we say, and then there's approximately 100,000 words coming at us from external sources that we pay attention to, that we absorb 100,000 words a day. I want you guys to take note. And this is something that I've studied, and I will put out some more blog posts. I have a book coming out called Whispers of the Mind, How Thoughts Become Things, and it's going to go into a lot more detail. But the words that we are hearing, the words that we are seeing in our daily environment still affects us subconsciously, okay? So I'm talking the TV, the news. I'm talking people, I'm talking social media, I'm talking music, I'm talking the environment around you is going to affect your subconscious, and it's going to cause you to either, it's going to uplift you, or it's going to cause you to do those trauma responses. And so I want you to take a moment this week, and I want you to think, what am I saying to myself? What am I saying to my children? What am I hearing? What am I seeing? What words are coming at me? You know, I watched the news, and that was so negative. So let's cut the news out for a day or two. Let's maybe not spend so many hours on social media. Let's cut this out. Let's listen to some happy music instead of all of the negative. You know, maybe let's not watch this horror-filled thing that's going to send me through this trauma cycle, whether I'm paying attention or not. Maybe let's watch something a little bit easier. Let's do something else. Because what's happening is while we are speaking all these words to ourselves and others, our subconscious is still absorbing all the words that are around us. And we're taking it in. And it's filtering through our subconscious all the time. And if we don't pay attention and we don't clean up the environment that we're in, if we constantly stay with a group of nonstop negative people, if we constantly stay and have the news blaring on all night long, all day long on the television, you know, if we have all of the negative music we can find, if you have all of the depressing music you can find, you're not going to get over depression and get through depression and anxiety listening to depressed music. You cannot get through depression. It's a scientific fact. You will not get through depression and listening to depressed music. It's all on the wrong frequency, and you cannot do it. And so we need to pay attention to the words that are coming at us, as well as the words that are in our minds and the ones that are coming out of our mouths, because we don't want any of those words to be hellfire. We don't want that. We want them to be uplifting and life-giving and positive and peaceful. And this is where we want to understand. So how, because I promised at the beginning of this, how can we do this? How can we make this better? If we can use words to build ourselves up, how can we do this? First thing, actively go on a negativity diet. Just spend 3 days. Have you heard of like a 3-day cleanse or whatever? Go put, give yourself a negativity cleanse for 3 days. Try it for 24 hours because sometimes that's hard. For 24 hours, I want you to absolutely stop being around that negative friend that refuses to say anything positive. For 24 hours, stop the self-criticism. For 24 hours, stop those self-deprecating jokes, you know, because those actually, your subconscious doesn't know that you're joking. Your subconscious doesn't know the difference and has no idea what sarcasm is. So every time you make a joke about yourself because you're uncomfortable about something, your subconscious is taking it as a put down. It's not, it doesn't understand. So, and that's one of the things I always had to do, because if I'm uncomfortable about something, I make a joke about it, you know, not realizing that I'm actually hurting my subconscious and putting more negative things in there. And so that's one of the things that I have to work on. Gossip and speaking ill of somebody else, those are still negative words. If they're coming out of your mouth, those are still negative words. And this is one thing you're thinking, but this person hurt me. Yes, they did. But by putting those hurtful words through your vocal cords, you're hurting yourself, because it ain't hurting them. It's hurting you, you know. And so we want to make sure that for 24 hours, let's just take all that negative and try to throw it out. It's hard. It's not easy. It's hard. Let's think on positive words throughout the day
I want to interrupt you. I want to interrupt you for one more minute here. I have a listener that texted me a question. Why is it easier to support other people as opposed to ourselves, and is this part of codependency?
Yes, it is. It is, and it's easier to support other people because we don't have to face our own issues. When we're supporting someone else, we're not having to face the pain of our own past. We're not having to face the responsibility for our own mistakes. We're not having to face the trauma cycles that we put ourselves through. We're not having to do the work to reroute those negative patterns. We're not having to face that or put in any effort to better ourselves. So it's absolutely easier to support someone else. It is slightly part of codependency.
The word codependency, I'm codependent. When somebody says that, or I'm bipolar, how do you feel about labeling yourself as also, I think Erica was talking about, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a recovering alcoholic, or I'm a recovered alcoholic. So there's, you know.
I don't even
different.
Like labeling it that way. If you want to know my honest to goodness opinion, I don't even like labeling recovered alcoholic. My father had an alcoholic issue when he was younger. He does not claim alcoholism at all. For 43, 44 years, he does not claim alcoholism at all. That is a past label that he tore off, shredded, and got rid of. Not everyone is able to do that, though. So I do not, I try not to, and that's the reason why when I was speaking to you earlier about the word my, I'm very cautious about saying anything to anybody, because everyone is in their own phase of recovery. Everyone's in their own phase of learning and growth and in their own spot, you know, along the road of their journey. And so I never try to come at somebody harshly and say, you drop that word my right now, you know, because you don't know that the word my is an issue. You know, now you know the word my could actually be causing some issues. So now you will actively think about every time you say the word my, it'll slip out a few times, and then you'll be like, you'll catch yourself, and then all of a sudden, a few weeks down the road, 2 months down the road, whatever, you will get to the point where you're like, oh, wow, I haven't said my in a long time, you know, and you'll know that you have moved on past that goalpost, and it'll be on down to the next goalpost in your journey, you know, so it's one of those things. I don't personally label myself a victim of anything. I don't personally label myself that at all, even though I went through some terrible, horrible victimization ordeal. But it took me a long time to get there. It took me a very long time to get there. So, no, I don't actually promote calling yourself codependent. I don't promote calling yourself bipolar or anything like that, although I still have an issue calling myself ADHD because that's something that slips out before I think, you know, and I've said that in this call, you know. So it's one of those things where when you get to that phase of ability to where you can say, this is no longer me, and take that label off and move past it, then you can throw it aside. But until you get to that point, it doesn't do any good for someone like me to be harsh with it either. But no, I don't think you should have that label. I think you're more than capable of moving past that label, tearing it off, and throwing it out. But you have to get to that self-realization.
I used to say that I am bipolar. And, you know, it's like me saying, I am cancer, you know, I'm not my diagnosis. You know, I would say I'm a victim of incest, and my therapist, you know, was, you know, to change the word victim to survivor. And now I change survivor to thriver. So I can understand. And then you said you were in logistics, and like, I don't know, what's your word for it? Explaining language, how
neurolinguistic,
you know.
Programming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I listen to meditations, and a lot of the meditations are just very simple. You know, I am powerful. I am, you know, and when I first started listening to that, my brain, or like you said, you know, those flashes, whatever, you didn't have time to like analyze it. And you would say like, I am powerful. And I'd say, no, I'm not. You know, or I think at some time it wasn't powerful, you know, but as I do this, you know, and it says, you know, just listen to the words and repeat after me, you know, and let them flow into your subconscious, you know, and so it's like, you know, okay, I'm not going to try to react or think it through. You know, I'm just going to say the words or the code, you know, and
that's the thing.
Attention.
Yeah.
So, well, I go to sleep with this up a lot.
Good. Well, that's a good place right before you've drift off into sleep, because right before you drift off into sleep, your conscious hasn't quite slipped into dreamland yet, and it's not fully conscious either. So it's like right there at that breaking point, right there in that bridge between the two, that's the best time to get all of those affirmations in, because it's like it slips past the conscious and that what I call the BS filter, where it tries to throw everything out and it goes right into the subconscious. And so that's the best time to do those affirmations, because it goes in so much easier.
Yeah, thank you. That helps.
Yes. So did that answer the question, I think?
Yeah. And then I also want to make sure that you spell out your website. You know, I know you said your name and then, you know, what it was, but could you spell it out to make sure people, if they could find, make sure they could find your website?
Yeah, it's called Synova Ink, and ink as in like an ink pen, because it was a pun off of Incorporated. So Synova, Synova, and then ink, ink.com. And then I have a free ebook that I give away that I wrote the commentary for, As a Man Thinketh, and I give that away. So it kind of gives you a beginner's jump into this kind of study if you guys are interested in learning some of these things and how your thoughts really affect you That's a good book to start with, and I give it away for free if you sign up for my email updates. And you can kind of, yeah, so you can go to the SynovaInc.com and get that signed up for free. It's under the freebies tab. But I want to make sure that you guys take this week or this month, because I'm on once a month, and really just think about the words that are coming at you, the words that are coming from you, and try to understand that they are affecting you whether you realize it or not. They really, really are. They're affecting your brain. They're affecting your body. They're going to send you either through the trauma cycle again, or they're going to send you through another response. And those responses can be programmed and reprogrammed, but it takes that first step, which is like what we talked about before. It takes the awareness. And so this week I want you guys to really stop and think, is this word going to harm me, or is it going to help me? Is this word going to motivate and inspire, or is it going to harm and hurt? I'd like to say that I'm inspiring everyone around me all the time. But I have fibromyalgia, and it's one of those things that I'm trying to actively get rid of. It's one of those labels that I want to get rid of. And I'm actively working on ripping that one off, but there's days that I don't feel good, and there's days that I'm not going to be one of those toxic positive people that says everything's wonderful, sunshine and roses. It's not. Life is hard, and there are going to be bad days, and especially if you're going through these trauma cycles over and over again. And this is one of those lessons, one of those topics I want you to write down. Even if you have to put it on your bathroom mirror, write, what are the words that I'm saying? What words am I saying? You just write down the word words, you know, anything. If you need more peace in your life, just write the word peace. Because just seeing the word peace, you're going to get that little bitty dose of those happy hormones, you know. And I mean, if you're getting 80,000 doses of bad hormones, that one little dose is going to help, you know. And so you never know. You might be one dose of cortisol away from a heart attack, and that little bitty dose saved your life. I don't know. So I say write the word peace on your mirror. It could be something that vital. We don't know how far or how close we are to the next, you know, health issue. But I want you guys to actively think about these words and try to, when you are down and when you are feeling to the point of despair, I want you guys to stop and think, okay, what are the words I'm thinking about? I feel depression today. I feel anxious today. I feel down today. You know, whatever the feeling is, go back and think, okay, well, what have I been thinking about? What have I been listening to? What have I been doing that is causing me to have this trauma cycle again? And I guarantee you, if you go back and listen to the words you've been saying or hearing or visualizing, they have been negative, and the majority of them have been negative to the point now you're starting to feel it in your body. All right, we've got 7 minutes left. Is there anybody on the line that wants to say something? I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing me blither. I have Bajit, I think is how you say his name. He's online. He's from India. Thank you so much for listening. I am so thankful. And Billy and Jamie, they've been watching through my Facebook page. Thank you, guys. Anybody else online? Hello?
I'm here, Shanova. This is Annie.
Hi, Annie.
Hi. I have a comment on the power of words that I wanted to share.
Okay,
so when I was in the fifth grade, I had kind of a mental breakdown, and I was unable to speak for a while because I kept getting strep throat over and over and over again. I was out of school for almost a year. And I think that was my body's way of saying, don't tell.
Yeah. It probably absolutely was. Was you traumatized just before that?
Yes. Yes, it started, the incident started when I was little.
Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that's what it was. Yep. Yeah, because see, your body is going to go through these cycles, and your body is when you're being traumatized, your body is going through so much trouble because cortisol, we got a couple minutes, I'll try to tell it quick. Your body has got a fight or flight mechanism that's only supposed to last for a few minutes, okay? When you're fighting off a bear, your body fills with cortisol and adrenaline, okay? Those are the two stress hormones that we've talked about tonight. Well, what happens in your body when that happens is it stops digesting food, because who cares if you digest your hamburger if you actually get killed by a bear? So you stop digesting food. Your kidneys and your liver stop filtering out toxins. So you literally stop filtering out the toxins out of your body. So they stop working, and all those toxins start backing up into your system. So we all know that that's going to cause problems. Well, if that's not bad enough, then your all of your cells stop reproducing. So literally your muscle tissue stops rebuilding muscle tissue. All of the dead cells and all of that is not being regenerated into new cell tissues and things. So you're literally not rebuilding muscles. You're not rebuilding lung tissue. You're not doing that. All of your oxygen in your blood is going to your lungs and to only part of your brain, okay? To the fear center, okay? All of the critical thinking skill size of your brain is starting to get oxygen deprived. So literally your body is shutting down except for your arms, your legs, your lungs are overworking, your heart's overworking, and then the fear center of your brain. Other than that, everything else is shutting down from the inside out. That's only supposed to last for a couple minutes while you fight off that bear or you run for your life. Unfortunately, we have 100,000 thoughts a day, and 80,000 of them are most likely negative, and so we are constantly filled with those stress hormones, and they're not supposed to be that way. So that's the reason why our livers go bad, our hearts go bad, our lungs go bad. We get all of these inflammation problems, and then we start having this health problem. We have heart attacks. We have strokes. We have all these things. And it all goes back to the inflammation buildup because we have an overdose of stress hormones in our body, okay? So this is the reason why I'm saying we really want to focus on the word, because we're killing ourselves from the inside out because we're so high stress.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have a comment before we go? I think we've got 2 minutes. Did Victoria get off in Cricket?
Yep.
Victoria and Cricket.
Still here.
Still here.
Yes. I wanted to remind everybody that we're on 5 nights a week, and we have a Zoom meeting Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. And I want to just thank everybody and thank you for being our guest, and thank you everybody that's been on the panel, and continue to support NASCA by taking advantage of all the programs that we do have and supporting yourself and giving yourself all these positive messages and just continue to grow, and you deserve it. You deserve all the best of life. And we're going to close out with some music, if I can get that played. Annie, could you play the music for us?
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was blue. You are forgotten after all that you've done. Thank you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.